This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered! Oh my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far, I ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to episode 57 of The Roundtable. I am not Grant Brisby. I am Andy McCullough here. Grant is on a boat, I think, possibly. I never know where Grant is to begin with, but I think he's right now on a boat or a cruise or something. So with Grant gone, we were searching far and wide for someone who can fill in what he brings to the show, which is being a dumbass from the Bay Area. Unfortunately, we can only find someone from the Bay Area. It's Katie Wu, our Cardinals beat writer.
Well, give me some time. I'm sure the dumbass factor will pop up at some point.
And we also have Mark Carrig, America's editor. We're here. We're podding. Mark, what's up?
Just adding in, baby. Just editing and doing administration. Boy, it's fun.
Hey, Mark, good job putting the evil on Ellie De La Cruz, who's 0 for the second half so far. Really good stuff.
What's his WRC plus?
108.
It doesn't matter what it...
It kind of does. Actually, when it goes under 100,
well,
it kind of does matter.
It actually does matter
when it goes below league average.
Katie, like, who clearly has no idea what the hell we're talking about. Andy seems to think that getting to the All-Star game is all about statistics and doesn't seem to think that being a fun ball player that's cool to watch is warrants invitation to an exhibition game played in the middle of the summer.
So Andy is anti-hype? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, pretty much. He's anti-everything, to be honest with you, Katie, but like definitely anti-hype. Yeah, I think that's a fair statement, and I think it's ridiculous. Anyway.
What better way to market the game than a catcher from a last-place team hitting a home run and winning MVP? What better way to sell the game? Wouldn't it be a better idea? They could never do this because the guys just want to leave, but wouldn't it be better if the starters came in the seventh inning? Like Garrett Cole pitches the seventh instead of the first.
That'd be funny.
Okay,
this is sort of like, it'd be different. I could get onto that.
Garrett Cole comes in to close out the All-Star game. I love that.
Well, it's like the NBA All-Star game is the best of all the All-Star games. I assume hockey still has an All-Star game. I don't know how they do it. Who cares? It's hockey. But, you know, at the end of the game, Steph Curry has the basketball.
Yeah, but like, okay, so we talked about this before, about the home run derby and kind of changing the order to spice it up, right? And you're sort of talking about the All-Star game now. You know, of all the major North American sports, the baseball All-Star game is still the highest rated on television.
Is that true?
It's true. Now, it keeps going down, right? Okay, but it's at the. I read this. Richard Deitch had it a couple days ago. It's still the highest rated of the four. So, you know, I think like we get into this habit in baseball where everything's broken, everything sucks. We got to fix it. And it's like, you know what? Maybe the All-Star game's fine. I wish they'd go back to wearing their uniforms. I like that better. All right. You know, Andy rolls his eyes because doesn't give a damn. But like, and by the way, I'm trying real hard not to swear. You know what I noticed about our pod, dude? Guys, there's like a little E on our pod.
Oh, you guys got the
E. It's explicit. And it's like, and I'm looking at that because I played it the other day just to like, you know, I wanted to hear how dumb I sounded on a certain topic. And my daughter was in the car and I hit it and I saw the little icon. I went, oh, no, I got to stop saying bad words. I think because it's almost
all me.
Not safe
for work. Look at you guys.
Yeah, explicit.
I'm double thinking my appearance. I don't want the E on me.
Yeah, well, too late, pal. Welcome.
Yeah. Katie, you're here because the trade deadline is upon us. It's basically trade deadline season. And every year there is a baseball team that, quote unquote, holds the keys to the trade deadline. It is the St. Louis Cardinals. But for once, they are sellers officially.
Officially.
Okay.
They are selling. Yes.
What does that entail?
That's a good question, because I think this is a first time for everything and for everyone in St. Louis. The Cardinals have had a winning season under President of Baseball Operations John Mozeliak's tenure for all 15 years. They have never sold, but here they are, a dismal first half, a historically bad first half. We'll do that to you. So basically, the Cardinals are going to sell, but they're not going to fire sale. They fully intend on being competitive in 2024. When you look at the division and their core players, you think, yeah, that's a reasonable goal. Problem is they have virtually no pitching. So this trade deadline is going to be the start of what will be a massive overhaul for St. Louis in their pitching department, both in the rotation and in the bullpen. You know, it's not something they can address in 2 weeks. It's going to be the start, and they'll carry that over into the offseason. But they are selling. Pitching is the main prerogative, as Mo said to the media on Monday. And they're kind of going to go from there, but they do have a ton of key pieces. And I do think that, you know, they do hold the keys to this deadline.
I read that, right? I read the story that you wrote.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Thanks.
I read that. Welcome. I don't believe it.
I'm a subscriber, so I read it. And they talked about swing and miss pitching, which makes sense. I have two questions about that. One, why did it take them this long to realize, hey, wait a minute. And I know that some of it's the rule changes, but like, shouldn't they have anticipated that this would be a thing? All right, that's one. And number two, how can they think they're going to be competitive when they're announcing to the world, they're out in the market with the other 29 teams of trying to get guys who can swing and get swings and misses? Why would they be better positioned than other clubs trying to get the same kind of commodities, like where they're all of a sudden going to get the critical mass and have enough of those guys to drastically change the outcomes of their team? That, I'm curious about that. And like, you know, when you look at what they have and what's in front of them, I guess what is your take on whether doing a quick turn rebuild, as the Yankees basically did 7-8 years ago, is that something they can really pull off? Or are they being super optimistic? Because when I look at it, it feels like there's a lot of things that got to go right for this to come off the way they're talking about it. What's your take on that?
Well, Craig, I got three words for you on why this is going to work out. The Cardinal way, right? That is what they're banking on. They're the Cardinals. They don't lose. What are you talking about?
Oh, my God.
No, and on all jokes aside, that's completely fair. I mean, I remember talking to people in the organization in spring when they did not augment the rotation at all. And a popular quote that is continuously coming up from Cardinals fans is a quote from Mo in February when he said, you know, we have 6 starting pitchers. We feel really good about that. What he did not really term was the quality of those starting pitchers. And when you take into consideration the Cardinals' penchant for weak contact, pitch to contact guys, you think about their usually pristine defense. You think about the fact that they were able to shift really strategically up until the season. And it was a strength for them. It really was. But when the rules changed and you saw the depth that was coming and the amount of position changes that were going to happen to this core, I raised the question to the organization, is there concern that with the way the new shift, the banning of the shift rules impact defense, that your pitch to contact strategy will not work as well? And I was told I was blowing things out of proportion. Now, okay, sometimes I do have the tendency to do that, but look who's laughing now, right? Like, look who's laughing now. Again, like you mentioned, Craig, they're in a huge hole because just like every other team in baseball, they're looking for the exact same guys. And you can't just go out there and trade for these guys. So you're going to have to spend money. And that's what the Cardinals don't do. They are in St. Louis, but they are not small market. If you guys have ever been to St. Louis, you know, it is really they really pack the house. Cardinals fans are like second in attendance every year in baseball to only the Dodgers. So they have the money, but they just don't spend it. So that's where I get a lot of skepticism is I don't really think it's going to be a matter of if the organization changes their philosophy. It's going to be if ownership changes its spending.
Have they considered calling the Marlins about Sandy Alcantara or the D-backs about Zach Gallen?
I don't really know if they're familiar with those names. Maybe they were in the minor league system. Can't remember.
It's worth a shot. You know, you try and take a bounce back. I know Alcantara's struggling a bit this year. I guess I share the skepticism. I also share Mark's sort of like, you're just figuring out now that missing bats is good sort of realization or whatever thought process with this. They do have a lot of good position players. They do have the sort of players who can get guys, at least you can dream on, swing and miss. I don't foresee them being able to get like top prospects back, but it does seem like they have a position player surplus that you can at least get some sort of arms from, right?
I would agree, but the problem there is they love their core so much.
And they don't want to trade
Actually, I get it. The guys that are going to net the most profitable return are going to be guys like Brendan Donovan, who they do not want to part with. Lars Nootbaar, who they do not want to part with. Who every other organization is looking and they're like, you know who would really like Brendan Donovan? Lars Nootbaar. So now the Cardinals are in they did this to themselves, but they're in a problem in which they love their core so much, but how many pieces of that core can they be willing to part with to get what they so desperately need, which is pitching? And the good news for St. Louis is they do have a lot of position log jams. It's, I think, one of the reasons why they are in this position to begin with. They just have too many guys that fit too many of the same positions. They have like 18 corner outfielders. You don't need that many corner outfielders. And they have a middle infield log jam too. And their top prospect, Mason Wynn, is knocking on the door in AAA. He's talking about arm speed with Ellie De La Cruz. I think he's almost just as exciting there. But they have the guys. It's just a matter of who are they willing to part with. And in years past, Cardinals have been very stingy with parting with their homegrown talent. That might be one of the changes they have to make this trade deadline and this offseason.
Who do you think in that group, if you had to forecast it today, is the person that won't be in this organization come the opening of spring training, right? And I ask that, it's less about like what you're hearing and more about like when you see what their kind of roster situation is, where their depth is, and also maybe perception of the player in the industry, right? When you add all that stuff together, who's the name? What's the name? That if you had to guess.
Well, I think we spent a lot of the All-Star break talking about guys like Randy Rosarena, Adolis Garcia, who would fit in the same names as Sandy and Zach Gallen in terms of former Cardinals that went out and thrived in other organizations. I'm going to add Dylan Carlson to that list. Dylan Carlson was a top prospect for the Cardinals. He came up in 2020. We all know 2020 was a really just awkward season. Was third place rookie of the year in 2021. And then in 2022, at this time last year, was told, you're not going anywhere. We value you in the organization. Cardinals, shocker, were buyers at this deadline, but again, looking for pitching. And they were not willing to part with Dylan Carlson, and they didn't. And then Carlson played through an injury that he wasn't super honest about, that he was dealing with. Numbers tanked in the second half. He lost his spot this year, was the fourth outfielder. And it just looks like they don't have the trust in him. I mean, put it this way, yesterday this dude goes 3-for-4, makes incredible catches in center field, and is told with Tyler O'Neill coming off the injured list as early as Tuesday that he is going to be the fourth outfielder again. But he has the athleticism, switch hitter, and it looks like he's fallen out of favor in the organization. I could see him being a trade piece, and then probably at this time next year, we're going to be talking about how Dylan Carlson made an incredible play in the All-Star game for another team.
I'm looking through their baseball reference, and like all of these names strike me as players who I've like definitely read stories about them being future All-Stars for the Cardinals, or like actual All-Stars for the Cardinals. It seems like they're just going to have to make a series of challenge trades. Like if you're not going to trade Goldschmidt or Arenado, who are the main commodities, like, and I get like, I guess they've decided that they can't trade Lars Nootbaar or whatever. You're going to have to make like challenge trades with like Tommy Edman and, Dylan Carlson and Paul DeJong or whatever, which like those are more difficult to execute because you're giving up less.
Exactly. And when you're looking at guys like Tommy Edman or again, Brendan Donovan, really any of those young guys, it's clear why the Cardinals didn't want to part with them before, but I'm not quite sure what they expect to do if they want to get that high value pitching, because they're not looking for any kind of pitching, right? They're very specific. They want more swing and miss, and they want young, either near major league ready or major league ready pitching prospects. They don't want to bid low or bid high on a low A guy that could be something. They want surefire, they're almost ready talent that they can bank on in 2024 and 2025. But now they're going to have to part with some guys that they figured were going to be key in that mixture, in that core, in 2024 and 2025, and they have to make sure they get it right. They can't afford to mess up. They can't. You can't afford to be bad in St. Louis. I mean, it does not fly here, but you can argue that their traditional lack of spending and their inability to recognize the game was changing and their methods needed to change as well got them here. And now they have to do some very out of characteristic things, like selling at the deadline, like publicly saying, hey, you know, even though we play in one of baseball's weakest divisions, Mo on Monday basically said, doesn't really care how the next 2 weeks go. They could go 12-2 and they're still going to sell. So it's a product of their own doing again, and they're going to have to part with some really good talent just to keep themselves afloat and not waste the prime years of Goldie and Nolan.
That's at least a sign of not being delusional, I guess, that they understand what the problems are. Like, there's at least, you know, whatever. You don't need to give out too much credit for a team that's 12 games under in the worst division ever. But, like, at least they're not being, like, delusional about it. They understand that their pitching is broken.
They've had conversations, too. I thought actually, for as public media sessions with front office executives go, you get a lot of, like, word vomit most of the time. But I thought Mo on Monday for nearly 30 minutes was as honest and reflective as he could be given the situation. Obviously, he's not going to go out and say their entire trade deadline plans, but he was honest in talking about the conversations he had with his staff and ownership about the changes that need to happen with pitching development and identifying pitching talent. And I think it's been a long time coming, and fans can say, well, yeah, it's about time, but at least they've recognized it now. And if you're going to take comfort in anything from this horrible season, it's that change will come from it.
You mentioned pitching development. Look, we've talked a lot about acquiring talent somehow, and certainly that's a big part of assembling a pitching staff that's competitive. But what we've also seen in the last few years, really, is that there are organizations building these guys, right? Like, they've built labs, they've got training programs in place, they've got a whole array of coaches where they're basically teaching dudes how to get swings and misses somehow, whether it's spinning the ball or throwing it harder or whatever, okay? Where are the Cardinals in that arena? Like, because I'm just curious, as someone watching this, and you know, obviously what Mo said, this is sort of a huge moment in the organization, right? There's a lot of things that are starting now. So I guess I want to know what the baseline is for where their pitching development is, as far as like using technology, sort of the different methods we've seen other clubs use to great success. Where are the Cardinals in that arena? How much further do they have to go to get to the point where maybe they're churning out some of these guys instead of having to pluck them out of other organizations or pay a big price for them in free agency?
I think that's one of their long-term goals, and they have a very difficult task ahead in revamping their player development system while still being competitive as early as next season. That's a lot to ask. The Cardinals don't draft very high, right? When you're a winning team, you don't get a lot of top 10 draft selections, if ever, but still their director of scouting, Randy Flores, who is just really respected in the organization, has done a considerable job drafting talent. But a lot of the guys that the Cardinals drafting department have looked at have been that same prototype that they have, that they're trying to change, right? They're the guys that sit mid-90s, weak contact, play to your defense kind of guys. So you can be successful there, but not when you have an entire staff where you're relying on the exact same prototype. So I think the Cardinals are looking internally, what can we do? What kind of changes can we make? We joke about the Cardinal way, but it's true. This club is rooted in tradition, and change is really, really hard to come by in St. Louis, because why change when things work and you win the division and you sell 2 million, 3 million tickets a year or get that in revenue? Why change, right? But now I think they're looking at, especially internally, what they can do with pitching development and how they can increase the swing and miss, what changes they need to make. And I think that they are at a crossroads. I think this is going to be a long-term process that, again, starts now, but will carry into the offseason. Maybe they do some staff changes. Maybe they bring in different equipment, different technology. But it's pretty clear that they're lacking some of the skills that organizations like the Dodgers or the Rays have in terms of developing pitching talent.
Should be more like the Yankees.
Look at the Cardinals and the Yankees, both in last place. They do everything together.
What a strange baseball season. This is a weird year, huh?
This is a very weird year.
Yeah, I was watching Yankees Angels last night and thought to myself, you know, this is pretty entertaining for a couple of non-playoff teams in July.
Yeah, the playoffs are
going to
be great.
A lot of drama for that. Yeah, a lot of drama for a couple of teams that aren't going to make the cut. Pretty cool.
Oh, my goodness. You know, it's like, I'm not a betting man. Mark, you have a gambling problem. Maybe you can do something with this.
I used to have one. No, not anymore.
I wonder what odds I could get right now that the Cardinals win the division next year. If I had to pick, I think they're the best team. Like, I'm looking at their lineup. I look at all these players who are, like, pretty good, plus Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt. Like, I'll take that over pretty much everything else in the division. And that's why this is just such a strange, and we talked about this the last time you were on, just how weird it is to watch a team like this just play with, you know, its head up, its keister all year. I don't know. Like, they're baffling to me.
They're super baffling. They've made for some hilarious losses. Like, objectively speaking, they have figured out ways to lose in the most absurd ways. I'll be sitting at my desk or sitting in the press box, and I'm just like, no way. There's no way this happened. But no, I think you're right. I mean, almost everyone in the media picked the Cardinals to win the division, me included, this year. I went out, some smart, this is my dumbass factor coming out. I said they would win 95 games. Well, not right there. I mean, they might lose 95. But I still think if they can get pitching, which is a big if. I'm not saying it's going to be easy to go out there and just, oh, fix your whole rotation and fix your whole bullpen and fix your whole internal development system, and then you'll be good again. But their core is so good. And the division still won't be super great. Yes, the Reds are exciting and getting better, but I don't see really any other team close to making that jump of surefire competitors next year. So I do think they can pull this off.
I wish they had like a game score for bad losses. Because, ooh, like, yeah, every Mets story I read, every Padres story I read, every Cardinals story I read, well, this is the worst loss of the season. This is terrible. And it's like, was it? Where's the chart?
Like, no, seriously. They're like, we'll make it a challenge. You think that was bad? Wait till you see next Wednesday.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, you hold my beer.
I mean, Mark, you covered bad teams that were cursed. Like, I covered, like, a good team that was cursed. Like, the 2018 Dodgers were, like, the most cursed team that ever went to the World Series imaginable. Like, it was so bizarre watching how good that team was play that badly for a season. They still made the World Series. But, like, there's sometimes you're just tripping over your feet for an entire year. It's a weird game.
There's a fog that sort of descends on the clubhouse when that starts to happen early on. And no matter how experienced these guys might be, they're human beings. And, you know, you get to the end of April and everything's gone sideways. And then you've taken another one in the teeth that night. Those guys feel it, man. And it's, you know, you can't measure it. It doesn't make sense because it's not even a lot of times a reflection of their true talent. But yeah, it's a weird game and that stuff happens. And, you know, I think we're seeing it obviously in St. Louis. We're seeing it in other stops too. So it's, you know, the Mets are going through it. I mean, that is bizarre, right? So the Padres certainly are going through it. I mean, it's, but I feel like the Cardinals take the cake though, because the way in which this has gone down is not, you know, like with the Mets, you could see them like having a tough time because, you know, the team's older. Right? Like, it's an older team that you can see the issues and what's happened. Like, you know, they've paid for being kind of an older team. I mean, I guess at the Cardinals, you could look at the rule changes and think it was going to have an impact. But I don't even think it's fair to totally pin what's gone on there all on some damn rule change. Like, clearly there's more at play. So
they changed the rules for really the other weird 29 teams, too.
Exactly.
That's what I'm not sure if they're aware. If they're actually not the only team that's not allowed to shift anymore. Other teams can't shift either.
Well, it's one of those things that, like, when you brought that up on the last time you were on, I was like, okay, that makes sense. Like, that totally explains some of what's going on. But it's also like, all right, it's July.
Yeah, adjust.
You got to figure out. You know, it's like pitchers still whining about the clock. It's like, guys, it's the rules. Sorry. Like,
you know,
Joel Sherman had a great point in his column. He was like, if a player in basketball, like, doesn't get a shot off in before the 24-second violation, right, it's not the clock's fault. Right? It's the rules. So anyway, real quick, housekeeping, roundtable head of the week is Josh Temple. Josh commented on our video last week. He said, easily the worst episode of the roundtable yet. Where was the Buck Showalter content? So Mark, Grant's not here. What do you got on Buck?
Absolutely nothing. Gray manager. Not his fault.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day, crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants, an upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads, an ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLBSHOW. Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. One more great product from LinkedIn. You're there to network, you're there to look for jobs, you're there to post jobs. And how about LinkedIn Sales Navigator? It's a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/baseballshow. That is linkedin.com/baseballshow for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/baseballshow and get started.
Here's a question for you, Katie. Alec Burleson, Lars Nootbaar, and Jose Fermin for Shohei Ohtani. Who says no?
Maybe the Cardinals.
I mean, that's a lot to give up.
Too much. No, I'm kidding. That actually mirrors at least like what 5 of my emails per day look like of just some truly absurd trade ideas. And I'm like, guys, this, you may have a little bit higher idea. This is what I like to explain to fans. To get value, you have to trade value away. So you can't just loop in 3 guys that you're not big on and be like, oh yeah, we can get rid of them. And then we'll get Ohtani and everything will be great. That's not how it works. You're like, get ready to get your heart ripped out this deadline, because it's going to happen. They're going to get rid of guys that you like.
Well, they got 6 days for Cabrera to be involved in one of these. So let's get cracking.
I know.
What happened with Genesis Cabrera?
Well, I watched his Instagram story this morning and he is actually at Topgolf. So he is really living it. So Cabrera has been with this organization since 2019. He came up as a high leverage left-handed reliever. When he's right and he's hitting 96, 98 with that movement, he's nasty. The problem was he wasn't so nasty in 23. He missed the opening day roster. He actually played for the Dominican Republic in the World Baseball Classic. Cardinals said they didn't see enough of him this spring, so they want him to go to Memphis. He was back with the club in April and stayed up since. But his usage was different. He was no longer being used in high leverage. He was being used in low leverage. And there's 2 reasons for that. One, his ERA was above 5. And I know this Cardinals bullpen has not been great at all, but if you have a 5 ERA, you probably shouldn't be seeing those high leverage opportunities. And remember, this is a last place Cardinals team. They don't have high leverage opportunities. So I'm not quite sure. Like, and when they do, they're like in the 3rd inning. So if that's the inning you want, that's when the game is still close. And he, I think, the way that both Ollie Marmol and John Mozeliak explained it was time for a change of scenery. Cabrera was frustrated with his role. And they thought maybe he could go find it with another organization. So, which is interesting that this happened the way that it did, because Cabrera was definitely someone that like contending teams were going to look at and take a flyer on and be like, yeah, we'll take him. And now the Cardinals have 6 days to hope they can do that, or they lose a profitable trade chip for nothing.
He'll 100% be pitching high leverage innings for the Rays or the Dodgers in the postseason.
And he has a sick strikeout celebration.
Oh,
it's he'll strike someone out and then he turns around and he's like facing the outfield and then he squats and just freezes. That dude must have some really strong quads, because I tried to mimic it and I think my back cracked. I was like, how do you do that?
Look, Andy's all offended.
No, he does that. So like first out of the inning, he strikes a guy out. He does that.
Yeah. And that's beautiful.
Yeah. Mark, I don't hate that. That's funny.
But what if you had a prop? Would you hate that?
When it gets into arts and crafts, that's where I draw the line. We've been very clear about this. Like, you know, I love comedy. I don't love Carrot Top.
Man, what would be a great pitching celebration? Like, strike a guy out.
A cartwheel.
You want a cartwheel after a strikeout?
picture this. Picture like the most serious guy. Jack Flaherty is like the most serious hashtag don't think guy out there. He strikes someone out, you know, bottom of the seventh, sellout crowd at Busch Stadium is going wild. And he cartwheels off the field. That's sick. I'm rocking with you if you do that.
Is he wearing the Joker face paint when he does that?
I think you would hate that because you hate arts and
arts
crafts.
Arts and crafts.
Oh,
come
that's
on.
A good point.
Come on.
Be consistent. See, what I like is like if you know, strike a guy out and like do like inspect your own hands for sticky stuff. You know, like
show it to him.
Yeah, just show her, put some on. You know, like
that's basically what Scherzer does every inning now.
I know, right? It's like all passive aggressive.
My hands are clean. Good times.
It's just well done.
Good times.
Anyway,
good times.
Uh-huh. Right. Good times.
Mark, are they going to trade Ohtani?
Don't they have to?
Oh.
Now, don't they have to? They're in the toilet. They're finished. Okay, like I know they had a big win last night, but like I feel like they've shown too many times that, you know, that we had a horrible loss the night before, right? Like this just isn't a team that, you know, if you look at the math and what they'd have to do to get to the finish line, you know, in a playoff spot, I don't see that in him. Like I see that even in the Padres, as dysfunctional as they are, you can at least squint and see that there. I don't see a big run out of the Angels. And so I guess I was thinking about this, right? Like, I guess what's the bar that you would have to hit for a rental, right? Like, what is the biggest rental haul in the history of the trade deadline? And I guess, is that the bar that the Angels would have to clear to move this guy? And, like, I don't even know what that is off the top of my head, because Soto wasn't a rental, obviously. So, but it's just sort of weird thought exercise. Or is that even relevant? Because, you know,
well,
obviously whenever
I
that happened,
I mean,
the market's totally different now. Like, teams are so much more, you know, cognizant of, hey, this is 2 months, 3 months tops, you know?
I haven't had much time to think about this. It's only been the biggest story in the sport for the past 2 years. But
crazy.
Off the top of my head. So he's two players. Let's call him two players. Let's say he's like Trey Turner and Max Scherzer. That's a starting package. Except, right? And the Nationals did pretty well in that deal. They got Josiah Gray and Keibert Ruiz. Neither are like superstars, but both like sort of you know, second division to first division type players.
Gray's getting,
but even then,
know, he's,
but
yeah.
Gray's good. Gray's a perfectly fine like number three.
Yeah.
You know, Ruiz is a starting catcher in the big leagues. Okay, fine. But that's for a year and a half of Turner, right? So has there ever been a dual rental package that comes to mind, like a rental hitter and a rental pitcher? So, and then it's like, okay, so then you got to add up. Then you have to say, well, he's not actually two players. He's one player because he only takes one roster spot. So that increases the value. And then you look at what he can do for marketing and what, I mean, if the Tampa Bay Rays acquired Shohei Ohtani, you're telling me they're not selling out that ballpark, right? I mean, like he can make a real difference for a team like that in terms of like the money coming into the organization. And then, you know, you get the marketing, you know, potential, all that stuff. But even then, like it's less than Soto, right?
You would think. You know, and I was thinking about this reading Bowden the other day. Yeah, well, of course it would be less than Soto because of the control. Of course it would be.
I think, you know, you and I as, you know, as seasoned baseball people may think that, but I don't know if the public believes that. And I don't know if you're Artie Moreno trying to sell that to the public. It's like, oh no, we got like two, you know, this guy could be a number three starter in 3 years. And this guy, you know, he can help us really at shortstop in 2 years. Like, I don't know if that's as obvious a sell as what you're getting from Soto, where it's like, here's six prospects.
Right. No, I don't think it is either. But the bottom line is they've collapsed. They are in the midst of a collapse. Like this team, like from the last time we discussed this, they stopped winning baseball games. The hole they've got to climb out of doubled in size. Okay? These dudes are cooked. You're going to get absolutely nothing for him except for a comp draft pick if you let this play out. Or you can see what's out there and like probably get something competitive. And like you mentioned the Rays, right? Because they've like, that's a team that's being thrown in here. And I love it. Because like it makes me think of the Brewers getting CC Sabathia in 2008, all right? Where like the small market, this is where a small market team can play, right? Like they're not going to get this guy in free agency, but if you find a package, and as you said, they get this guy, holy smokes. Like they get a relevance they've never had in the history of their franchise, all right? And yeah, it might be ephemeral, sure. What if it leads to a world championship? these are really difficult decisions to make. I think it's why it's fascinating. It's why it's dramatic. It's why this time of year is awesome. But is that something that if you're the Tampa Bay Rays, like you should consider? Like, and I think every club that has a prospect should be looking at this. And yes, we all know that it's 2 months or whatever. But really what we're talking about is instant relevance, instant, you're going right to the top of the list of what's being paid attention to in the sport. You know, you've increased your chances of you know, winning the prize, man, like winning World Series, and that never goes away. So I don't know. Like when I think back, like CeCe Sabathia retired a couple of years ago, that 3 months in Milwaukee is still a huge part of that dude's story. Right? Like that's a Hall of Fame pitcher where it's like you remember that. And I remember, you know, he's making starts on a short rest, right? Right. He was emptying the tank into his walk year. And it's like when you bring that up with baseball fans, like it has never been forgotten. So I think let's not underestimate the impact of when you kind of cross that threshold into, you know, like huge star player ending up somewhere that, you know, you otherwise wouldn't see them. Right, CeCe was never staying in Milwaukee, and Shohei might end up this small market place, Tampa or wherever. He's not staying there, but like, wow, what an impact one could make in that time, and it could change the trajectory of the franchise.
If Grant was here, he would ring the bell because Ned Yost, part of the reason he believes he was let go that season is because he did not want to use CeCe on short rest. He didn't think it was fair to him. Katie, do you agree with Mark's groundbreaking point that teams should try and acquire Shohei Ohtani?
Controversial, I know. But I'm gonna have to side with Craig.
How is he so? He is so brave.
So brave. Get this man a statue. Put it outside the Athletic headquarters. I don't even know where that is.
Is there one? Put it outside. It's an ice sculpture on a 100-degree day.
It's not a question of if teams can make a package. I think there will be someone. There will be multiple teams probably willing to overpay, even in this risk-averse environment. It's a question of how much of an overpay is enough. If you are Artie Moreno, you're signaling to your fans, don't come to the ballpark ever again. Because there's no reason to watch this. There's no reason to care about this product. We couldn't win with Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. This, like, you're just like, when you have Ohtani, even if you're a game under, as they are right now, even if you're 5.5 back of the second wild card, you have Shohei Ohtani. And I feel like holding on to him for every single day that you can, one, it may increase the chance that you can retain him beyond this year. And two, it's better to have him than to not have him, even if you're getting back a reasonable overpay package. Like, whatever. It's not like they're going to be offered Zach Gallen, right? They're not going to be offered Randy Arozarena for, you know, 3 months of, what, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're going to be offered the poo-poo platter type thing. I don't know. I think if they were 20 games out, if they had the A's record, if, you know, they're like, I understand that they have lost 1,000 games in a row before last night. I understand that they're probably not going to make the playoffs.
Dude, Trout's hurt. They haven't won games.
I understand. But they have Shohei Ohtani. And the second they don't have Shohei Ohtani, everything, like, they're completely irrelevant as a franchise.
But, like, okay, so I got to say, though, and this is, I hear what you're saying, and a month ago I was on board with that, and, like, I feel like in my mind they've crossed the threshold into, I'm convinced they're done. Okay, now.
What, I don't disagree, really, by the way.
No, I don't disagree. Because I hear what you're saying. I know that. Yeah. Like, they're better. Bottom line is, they're better with him than without, obviously. And that's not just about a statistical value. I mean, you're talking about the full package, what it means for the organization, all that stuff. I get it. But I think what we're really thinking about or talking about here, and this is what I've been really fascinated by this, right? Like, this isn't basketball. This is just another reminder that, like, in this sport, you can have the two best players walking the face of the earth. And if some of it is just they didn't make the right moves. They, you know, there were times where they probably should have acted more aggressively and they did not. There were times where they acted too aggressively and then Anthony Rendon's there, right? But ultimately, even if they'd been perfect, it's really difficult. This sport is not wired to where two guys, even that great, can just carry the whole thing, right? And this, because, like, you know, we can't talk about this like, oh, what are the Warriors without Steph Curry? It's a different, you know, thing. And I think that's why maybe I'm sort of at the point where it's like, you know, not only did they not make the playoffs, I don't even think they finished with a winning record with these guys on. It's not like, oh man, a bunch of tough misses. Oh, they were in it right until the last week. No. Like, they haven't been close enough already. All right. It's like, why would something change in the last 2 months after like this track record of years now, where they not only missed the playoffs, they weren't even competitive. Like, they weren't even like, you know, generally even like in the conversation late into the year. And it's like, yeah, this sucks. This is the worst case scenario for them, right? Like, they will go down, and it's infamous what's gone on with the Angels the last decade. All right. And this is the perfect capper to it in a lot of ways, in that, like, even now, no matter what they did, it just didn't work. So to me, it's like, recoup what little you can from it and like just take the ouchie now. All right. Because at this point, you're wearing it, whether it's August or October. Right. So you might as well get cracking. You know, try to figure this out. Like, is clearly the end. And as far as him, like, okay, and this is an interesting point, right? Like, retaining him. Again, no one knows exactly what this dude wants. And but let's just assume that, you know, like a lot of guys, like, winning matters to him. I don't know, man. Like, wouldn't the Angels be better positioned to sell a winning vision with whatever this guy gets back? And then you throw out whatever money he wants, and you're running on track record. Like, he's got relationships with people, and assuming that they're not toxic or broken, like, that tends to help out too, just like familiarity and all that stuff. Wouldn't they be in better position to retain him?
Yeah, I mean, that's what the Red Sox thought when they traded John Lester. So, yeah. And that worked, right? Lester went back. Great. You know, the Red Sox won the 2015 World Series. Yeah, I remember all that.
Andy's making that up, guys. That's not how it worked out. But, you know, all of this is conjecture, clearly. But, like, Andy, I'm just saying, like, I'm not sure that I can do the whole ride or die thing, because this ain't basketball. And at this point, we're not talking about some one-off rough season. They've been this. They're not changing. It's over.
I would say that they're only... hope as a franchise is to convince Shohei Ohtani to stay. And I think they're better suited to do that if they retain him and make the best offer that suits his needs this winter, rather than trading him and showing him and giving him an opportunity to see what life is like on the other side.
But can they do that though? Because I feel like the only time we ever talk about the Angels, that's either Ohtani or are they going to sell the team, or this organization is a disaster? There has not been one inkling over the past decade that I can remember being confident, like, oh, Angels are going to figure it out. I mean, I was dubbed an Angels hater on the 3-0 show, and correct, because everyone's an Angels hater. They haven't done anything to earn the trust from baseball fans. When baseball collectively, the most interested you can be in a team is whether or not the owner is selling, and then you go back to disinterest. How are you supposed to market that as a winning, profitable future for the inarguably best player in the game?
By the way, Angels fans are Angels haters, for the record.
Right, we're all Angels
they're
haters.
They're so sick of it.
Come on in.
They're tired of it, man. Like, and they should be. This is like, I mean, has there been anything quite like it? I think of like Ernie Banks and the Cubs for all those years, right? I guess like the closest would be like that and like Billy Williams. Like, they had a lot of great players on those teams, and they never did anything because, you know, the organization was jacked up and like it just never really worked out. They've been cursed, right? Like, whatever. But like, at least they were in the hunt some of that time. Like, it's really remarkable. The Angels just have been not only missing the playoffs, but not particularly close either. And that's just, it's really hard for me to envision that, like, that, you know, that just changes somehow if they hang on to him and all this stuff. It's really hard to see.
Yeah, I'm not saying any of it changes. I'm not saying that they're not, you know, in an ongoing disaster. I'm not saying that even that I think they're going to sign Ohtani. I just think trading Ohtani and giving up on this era for whatever package of prospects and controllable guys and whatever comes back, you're basically telling your fans you should really root for the Dodgers.
And then when he doesn't re-sign and you still don't have him, is that the same message you're telling? Is that somehow better? Because they're still not going to be very good.
Then go with like a Phillies Scott Rolen plan and just badmouth him to the media. You know, just be like, ah, oh, he was a jerk. Yeah, we never
just
liked
start
him.
Working the phones.
That's he's not a winning player.
Because baseball fans trust the Angels ownership and organization so much to take that at face value.
The thing is like, it's a terrible conundrum. I felt like the Nationals last year were in a really complicated place where it was like, you can't trade Soto, but you have to trade Soto. The Angels are there, but it's like much sadder, right? Like it's because, you know, like with the Nationals, it's like, look, they just won the World Series a few years before. They knew they were going to get a really big package back and you can dream on that. This is sort of like you're giving up on... You had the two best players in the world and you couldn't make the playoffs for several, like you had them together for several years and you couldn't make the playoffs. How do you sell your franchise to the public? It's also a good reminder of like, sometimes I watch the Dodgers and I'm like, man, having Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman like wins them just so many games, just those two incredible players, right? And in some ways, like, that demonstrates, though, like how good the organization is around them, that they can just get the maximum value from those two stars in a way that like the Angels couldn't with Trout and Otani. With you looking at the Cardinals now, right? They have Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado, and they're still in last place. And it's just like you can see the like how far a good team can be, the bar can be raised. When you have these like two sort of elite guys, and you also see where the bar needs to be for it to even matter almost. Does that make sense?
Dude, totally. Like, I mean, when you list, all right, name good Dodgers right now off the top of your head. Where does Will Smith's name get uttered? Okay. You watch them close, but like you would hear if you were to ask a typical fan a couple more guys before Will Smith, and that is a compliment to the Dodgers, and it's a compliment to Will Smith. That's how freaking good they are. That you would hear other, you'd hear Urias at one point or Kershaw or whatever, just like either, even not even if they're better right this second. I mean, just like prominent that you conceive as good competitive, like, you know, contributors to your team. Will Smith, right? This like terrific player might be 5 or 6. And that is the hallmark of a good organization. And that is something the Angels haven't come nearly anywhere close to in the last decade, when it was just Trout and then it was both of those guys. Like, they don't have any Will Smiths, right? Like, it's crazy. So yeah, I think it is a reminder too, like, look, the Dodgers worked hard to get there. Like, a lot of stuff has to go right. A plan has to be put in place. You got to have leadership and resources and a plan, and you got to be able to execute it. It's a lot. But yeah, it also is a sense of, man, that's a really high bar. And are the Angels anywhere close to that? No. Are they ever going to get anywhere close to that in the next couple of years? It's even hard to say that just because, again, the track record is so dismal.
Katie's cat has had enough of this crap, and I think the fans have as well.
She knew it. She's like, it's almost time to go.
She's like, we got stuff to do.
Let's wrap it up.
I got to go cover Adrian Palante's outing tonight. Katie, thank you so much for coming on. This was fun. Is Grant back next week? No. He's still on a cruise. We don't know.
Grant. Must be nice.
No, you know what he said last week, Katie? He goes, I'm going to be on assignment. Full of shit.
Just say you're going on the cruise, dude. Just say you're going on the cruise.
No, own it.
He's on a cruise that apparently like crashed before he got on. So who knows? Anyway.
Oh, out of San Francisco. I know it. I know what you're talking about.
So rate and review us. Tell everyone to listen to the roundtable. Have a good day. I was very wrong.